be seated. Okay, the third case for oral argument this morning is Joseph and Sarah Sapienza, plaintiffs versus Liberty Mutual Fire Insurance Company defendant. For the plaintiff, Sapienza's, we have Ms. Angela Brandt, an attorney from St. Paul. And for the defendant, we have Mr. Christian Price and Mr. Jack Heeb. Mr. Price is from Minneapolis, and Mr. Heeb is from Aberdeen. With that, Ms. Brandt, you may proceed, and you have 20 minutes.
Thank you. May it please the court. Counsel, my name is Angela Baronic Brandt. I'm here on behalf of Joseph Sapienza and Sarah Jones Sapienza. As the court is aware, you've agreed to answer a narrow certified question, which is, do the costs incurred by the Sapienzas to comply with the injunction constitute covered damages under the policies such that Liberty Mutual must indemnify the Sapienzas for these costs? The court should answer the question in the affirmative because, number one, finding coverage is consistent with the general principles of South Dakota insurance law. Number two, the plain and ordinary meaning of the term damages unambiguously includes the Sapienza's economic outlay associated with complying with the circuit court's writ of execution to demolish their home.
So you don't think there's an ambiguity yourself?
We do not believe that the term damages is ambiguous.
So if that's the case, then there's no reason to rely upon our rules of construction, which would require us to view the policy in the light most favorable to the insured, because in your view, you're already there.
That's correct. I mean, obviously, if the court determines that the phrase is ambiguous, then under Wilson, the court must construe it most favorably in favor of coverage. So I think that what Liberty Mutual is doing is trying to walk a really fine line, and they clearly don't want to say that the term is ambiguous because they don't want to run into the Wilson decision. They don't want to have the policy language construed most strongly in favor of coverage. But on the other hand, they're asking the court to apply this highly technical legal meaning of the term damages. And so if the court determines that based on their argument that the court needs to decide some legal determination of this term, then we're out of the analysis of the word being unambiguous, and now we're into ambiguous territory, and then we would have to be looking at the Wilson decision.
And so what definition of damages do you rely upon?
The definition of damages is the plain and ordinary meaning, which means any economic outlay associated with complying with the order for injunctive relief. And specifically in this case, we have the writ of execution. And the writ of execution said to the Sapienzas, you have 30 days to remove the home. And if you do not remove the home in 30 days, the sheriff will come out and remove it for you, and you will forfeit your $100,000 appellate bond, and that money will be paid to the sheriff's department, and any remaining money, if there is any, will go to the McDowells. So if you look at that circumstance, had the Sapienzas decided, well, we're not going to comply with the writ. You have to come get our house. We're going to make the sheriff's department do this for us. Then there would have been $100,000, no question, $100,000, plus the cost of their home that had to be paid to the Minnehaha Sheriff's Department and potentially the remainder to the McDowells. So because the Sapienzas chose to comply with the court's order and comply with the writ of execution, now we're in this sort of absurd situation where they followed the court's order and they're being denied coverage under the policy for which they paid premiums. And had they not complied with the court order, the Liberty Mutual would be out for sure the $100,000, and then we'd still be fighting over, I assume, the cost of the newly constructed home. But to
why does it make it more damages or less damages under your definition if the Sapienses raise the home themselves versus face the forfeiture of the bond, as you just argued? Why does that matter? What meaningful distinction is there between those two in relating to your proposed damage definition?
Sure. Nothing as it relates to the Sapienza's proposed damages definition, but certainly as it relates to Liberty Mutual's proposed definition of damages, because they want to narrow it to money that has been paid to a third party. And that $100,000, which is Sapienza's pay that out of their 401k, but that money had they not complied with the writ of execution, that would be pecuniary money that they had paid to a third party. So even under Liberty Mutual's definition, that's money damages under the policy. And we're arguing that it's broader than money that's being ordered to be paid to a third party, primarily because Liberty Mutual did not define the term damages in their policy. And so we have to resort to rules of construction. Secondly, there is no limitation in the policy language about the money needing to be paid to a third party. The language in the insurance policy in the primary layer of coverage is pay up to the limit of liability for damages for which the insured is legally liable. Damages for which the insured is legally liable. And here, the damage for which the insureds were legally liable, the Sapienzas, they were legally liable for the harm that their house was causing to their neighbor, the McDowells, and more generally, to the McKinnon Park District.
So when you say it that way, are you saying that the damage is what you just described, the injury to the McDowells and to the area? That's the damage.
That is what the court ordered the Sapienzas, that they were liable. And this court agreed that there was no amount of money that was going to be able to compensate the McDowells for that harm. So the injunction...
So does that satisfy your definition of damages, that kind of injury, and the legal liability to be accountable for that kind of injury?
That kind of injury...
That you just described.
You mean the harm that the house was invading the neighbor and the neighborhood?
Yes.
Yes.
If that's the case, then why would the policy separately define property damage?
Well, the harm is property damage. The damage to the McDowells is property damage to the McDowells.
Is there a difference between the word damage that we're talking about in the certified question and property damage as it's defined in the policy? Seems like there is.
There is probably a more clear definition of property damage in the policy, but I don't think that there's a dispute that the damage that the Sapienzas suffered was property damage.
And you're okay with that?
Yes.
You think that they're different? Damages, which is the term we're trying to define, is different than property damage defined in the policy.
Right, because what the policy says, and now is skipping to the excess policy, they say pay all sums in excess of the retained limit and up to our limit of liability for damages because of property damages. So we're talking about property damage is different than the term damages that this court is deciding on this certified question issue.
Okay.
So... we're not asking the court to make some departure from South Dakota law in order to find coverage in this case. St. Paul Fire and Marine tells us that unambiguous terms need to be given their plain and ordinary meaning. And we're talking about plain and ordinary. We're not talking about plain and ordinary in the context of insurance professionals. We're talking about plain and ordinary meaning that would be understood by the average insurance consumer in the state of South Dakota.
Aren't you getting perilously close to the doctrine of reasonable expectations, which this court has declined to follow?
No, we're simply talking about there is no definition of the term damages, and the court has said unambiguous terms need to be given their plain and ordinary meaning. And what we have here is an argument between, is it a plain and ordinary meaning that a general consumer would read into the policy, or is it the plain and ordinary meaning that sophisticated insurance individuals would think is a plain and ordinary meaning? That's the difference between the arguments that the Sapienzas are making and the argument that Liberty Mutual is making. So we also know that unambiguous terms cannot be enlarged or diminished by the judicial construction. We know that from the case of Ass Kickin' Ranch, which is 2012 South Dakota 73.
I believe we're the only state in the country that has that type of a case on the books.
I grew up on a ranch near Miller, and I thought it was highly appropriate when I read that case. And there is no other case that you can cite for that proposition. So
in Westlaw, it stands alone.
As it should. So again, we're not asking the court to make some departure from the prior cases that this court has decided relating to insurance coverage. We are asking the court to find that compliance with an injunction is considered damages under the policy for a couple reasons. First of all, if you read the plain language of the provision in the policy and where it's talking about damages, there's no qualifier that says who the damages are paid to. So that's number one. Number two, if Liberty Mutual wanted to constrain the term damages, they certainly could have defined it in the policy. They certainly could have put in their own exclusion for equitable or injunctive relief. This is a contract of adhesion. They could have defined the terms in any manner they wanted to, as long as they were legal. And now they're coming in after the fact and saying, we really don't want to have to pay for these damages, and so we're going to put up this, we're going to deny coverage. And even though our policy doesn't define the term damages, we want the court to apply a term, a definition to the term damages that doesn't exist in the policy.
It seems to me, and maybe I'm wrong, but it seems to me when you make that kind of an argument, it seems to me like you almost are suggesting that there's an ambiguity and that Liberty Mutual is somehow responsible for the lack of a more precise definition here, and that we should, under our rules of construction, hold them accountable for that. But I might be misunderstanding your argument.
Well, I would be perfectly okay if that's what you did. But in all candor, I don't think that the term damages is ambiguous. But I do think that it covers the kind of damages that we're talking about here, which are the damages that the Sapienzas paid in order to comply with the injunctive relief. The court ordered the Sapienzas to tear down their home. They paid damages, the cost of the damages that they paid with their home. They paid with their home. So the policy covers those types of damages, and they should be reimbursed for the cost of the demolition and the cost for the new construction.
I have a question about that.
Yes.
So I understand your argument when you talk about the cost of compliance, $60,000 or whatever it is, the amount of money it took to knock the house down and raise the structure. But when you talk about the house, the cost of construction, help me understand that. As you know, the district court mentioned this in a footnote in its opinion, and that certified the question to us, sort of wondering idly, maybe, about whether that was part of your damage claim as well. So I had that question, and if it's outside of the scope of this, let me know. But I don't think it is, because it seems like it's not, because I understand the argument that you want damages to equal the cost of compliance. But if you're seeking construction damages, aren't you also seeking the cost of creating the situation that required the injunction, which in turn required compliance? I mean, it seems different.
I go back to the only way The only way that they that this court and the circuit court determined the McDowells could be made whole is if the Sapienza's home was brought into compliance. The Sapienza's on remand, the circuit court said, you can submit new plans to the historic board. And it was right around that time that Liberty Mutual said, you know, we're kind of out of this at this point. So you, that's on you. That's injunctive relief. So the Sapienza's had to pay to get new plans, despite the fact that the McDowell's attorney told the historic board that the proceeding was governed by the rules of civil procedure, that Liberty Mutual didn't send their lawyer to represent the Sapienza's at that hearing. The hearing proceeded, apparently, according to the rules of civil procedure. And the board said, we don't like these plans, and we're not going to approve them. And the McDowell's lawyer said, that's it. That's their only chance. We're going back to the court. And the judge said, writ of execution. The only way to right this wrong is for you to tear down the house. And tearing down the house is the price that the Sapienza's paid in order to comply with the injunction.
That much I understand. Now help me understand how the construction is a cost of compliance with the injunction.
Because the Sapienza's are now paying a mortgage on a home that doesn't exist. And so they are out. They are out the money that they spent to construct the home. And the court said, you have to tear it down and rebuild it, or you have to bring it into compliance. And there was no way to bring it into compliance. So the only thing that they could do was destroy their own property that they paid for. And that was the damages that were paid.
Is there something about the debt or the mortgage that in some way impacts their relative state of compliance with the injunction?
No, they're just out the money that they spent to build the home.
Right, but I thought we were talking about compliance with the injunction. They knock it down, they're compliant.
Correct. Correct. But the cost to comply with the injunction included the loss of their entire home.
How do you see the owned property exclusion coming into play at all here with regard to the provision that says property damage is, it does not apply to property owned by the insured?
Well, I think that's probably under the first party coverage, and this is a third party claim. So, and I don't, that's not a defense that Liberty Mutual has raised in this instance, and I think that that's outside, respectfully, I think it's outside the scope of the certified question.
Okay, well, and that was something that Judge Lang had noted in his the opinion in which he asked the question. And I don't know whether that argument was made by either party to the court, as it may relate some, or whether it would relate at all to this question.
Yeah, and I don't think it does. I think the question is, does the cost to comply with injunctive relief constitute damages under this policy?
If we accept your argument about the construction costs or the cost of servicing the ongoing debt, the coverage starts looking a little bit more like first-party coverage in some ways, because now you're extending, and I'm question mark here, I'm not saying that, I'm just trying to talk with you about it, but it seems like then you're talking about like a casualty loss. You know, we don't have this house anymore. We should have a house, and we think that that's compensable. But this is a liability provision under the homeowner's policy. Help me understand that,
please. Correct. And the only reason the house is gone is because the court found that it was causing property damage to the neighbor, and it was the liability that that led to the injunctive relief, which led to the order to tear down the home. So it is related to liability, it's related to third-party liability, and it is a result, a direct result of the third-party liability.
One of the things that's a little bit different in this is, you know, when you talk about damages, normally you have an award by a jury or a court or something like that says, okay, here's what the damages are, or you settle the case and you say, here's how much you're going to have to pay. You know, this is a deal where you have a court order, and then you have the Sapienza saying, well, we're gonna hire this person, we're gonna spend this much money, we spent this much on the house. I mean, the damages, nobody, I mean, Sapienza's are kind of the ones just saying, here's what the damages are. And does that seem a little bit odd under a liability policy like this?
Well, no, I don't think it is, because it wouldn't be different than I think this is analogous to an environmental cleanup case, because we're talking about damage to the whole neighborhood and damage to the neighbors. And in those cases, when in the states that have recognized that there's coverage for injunctive relief under damages, those parties are ordered to do the cleanup. They're ordered to hire people to do the work. They're ordered to put the property back into the state that is acceptable. And so there isn't a court saying you owe $5 million. You have to pay $5 million for the remediation. They're saying you have to do the remediation, whatever the cost is. And so I think it's much more analogous to that situation than, I mean, the Sapienzas certainly weren't in a position to want to spend more of their own money than they needed to, and Liberty Mutual kind of left them out on the step on their own once the case got remanded back from this court. In the Sapienza versus McDowell case. And so they were doing that as judiciously as possible, but they were under a writ of execution that only gave them 30 days to do it. I see my time is out.
Okay, thank you, counsel. Mr. Preuss, you have 20 minutes, sir.
May it please the court, good morning. My name is Christian Preuss, and I represent Liberty Mutual Insurance Company, which is the defendant in the action before the federal court. At the outset, I'd like to emphasize one thing on the certified question, and that is that the court focuses on the word damages, of course, because the word damages is used three times in the insuring agreement, and liability policies provide coverage for damages. The court also modified the word damages first by referring to covered damages and then also under the policy. And I emphasize that because I think what the Sapienzas are doing here is two things. They're making two fundamental flaws. They're taking the word damages and they're lifting it out of the context of the insurance policy, setting it over here and coming up with a definition. Here's damages, pay us that. And they're not putting it, reading it in the context of the insurance policy, particularly in the insuring agreement. The second thing they are doing, quite candidly, is they're taking liability coverage, which is designed to pay for liability to a third party for the damages of that third party. And they're maneuvering it into first party coverage to pay for their own damages or their own loss. They're making both of those fundamental flaws. The other thing they're doing is they are not taking into consideration the allegations made by the McDowells in the underlying lawsuit. The McDowells sought injunctive relief. They have a problem next door. They want the house fixed so that their rights aren't violated. They also sought damages. The only property damage, and property damage, of course, is defined in the policy. It includes tangible property or loss of use of tangible property. The only loss of use of tangible property was their fireplace. They could no longer use their fireplace because the Sapienza's home was too large. When the court bifurcated the matter and heard the injunctive relief first, decided that, after that, the McDowells dropped their damages claim for the damage to the fireplace. Now, they had other complaints too, but the only thing that could have conceivably been covered under the Liberty Mutual policy is the property damage, which is loss of use of the fireplace. If they had proceeded and said, we also want to be paid for our damages for what happened in the past, as opposed to the prospective relief of correcting the problem for the future, they could have pursued that, and they could have recovered whatever their damages would have been to loss of use of the fireplace, or whatever it would take to correct it, and that would be a covered damage under the policy. That's exactly what the policy covers, is the damages to the McDowell's property. When looking at the policy language, and here's what the Sapienzas, I think, avoid doing, the insuring agreement, which is typical insuring agreement language, this isn't some unique language drafted by Liberty Mutual. I believe it's based on an ISO form, so you can find this all across the industry and all the homeowners policies. They're all written pretty similarly to this.
So these forms do not define the word damages?
They do not. And I think you would find it extremely rare for a general liability policy, either in the form of a personal liability policy like homeowners or umbrella, or even commercial, to define the word damages. It's just not. Okay. That's not how the policies are written. You can find it defined in some professional liability policies or directors and officers, but these are written in a fashion that it has not been necessary to define damages.
I was going to ask why, but maybe that's the answer. Just because it hasn't come up, hasn't been necessary, hasn't been adversely decided enough, maybe, to make that necessary?
No, I think it's the use of the word in the sentence in the insuring agreement. And also, this is a word that's been used, I couldn't even guess how long. You look at the cases that have concluded that injunctive relief is not covered because it's not damages. They go back to the 50s, 40s, 30s.
Fifth Circuit case from 55.
Which is one of the leading cases, but even that case cites previous cases. So, I mean, this is one of these issues that is so fundamental to insurance coverage and liability coverage that the term damages does not need to be defined. It's also understood it's the damages paid to the plaintiff, to the third party. That's the damages. And that's what the insuring agreement reads. It begins if. So the contingency, if you have a claim or suit against the insured, which we had, McDowell sued the Sapienzas, and the claim is for damages, a claim against the Sapienzas for damages. It's not a claim for anything that might come out of this and result in any economic outlay. It's a claim against the Sapienzas for damages, and the damages must be because of property damage. Here, the property damage is the loss of the use of the fireplace, and the McDowell's complaint claimed damages because of the loss of the use of the fireplace. If that had been preceded, it would have been covered.
Well, didn't they claim as well that the value of their house was diminished by the, wasn't that a claim in the lawsuit?
That is, but diminution of value of property is not property damage as defined.
In your policy?
I think that, yes, in our policy, and because it requires tangible property damage.
You have a provision that refers to that in your policy?
The definition of property damage refers to tangible property, at which courts have just uniformly held does not include diminution of value. You have to have a physical injury to the property or an actual loss of use of the property. So that part of it wouldn't have been covered. So even if the injunctive relief part had not proceeded at all, it had gone to trial and they had been, the Sapienzas had been found liable and pay for diminution in value, that would not be covered either. It would only be the damage, the property damage, which is the loss of the use of the fireplace.
You started out drawing our focus to the provisions of this specific policy. There's a number of cases cited by the parties. Some of the provisions have language that refer to sums that the insured becomes legally obligated to pay as damages. Here, this one is for damages which the insured is legally liable. So the to pay language isn't that is found in some policies as it relates to the insured isn't in this one. Do you see any distinction there? And if not, why not?
The only distinction I see is that the cases that you've referred to tend to be older cases, and they use the phrase as damages. And sometimes the argument was made that as damages is not real clear, that it applies only to the damages by the plaintiff. It's changed to for damages. So the first sentence of the insuring agreement, it's a suit for damages. And then after the first subparagraph, it's for the damages, which is limiting. It's using the preposition for and the definite article the to modify damages to make sure it's referring to the claim that is made against the insured for damages. And in the second sentence where it uses the definite article the to modify damages, that necessarily refers back to the damages in the first paragraph. So to answer your question, I think you get to the end the same way. It's just the organization of the sentence.
Then my other question is, can you dial down a little bit deeper into how you distinguish the environmental claims, environmental cases that are dealing with similar provisions? Because it does seem like a pretty analogous factual scenario in terms of what parties may be ordered to do in those cases as what occurred here.
Certainly. In the environmental cases, the injunctive relief that's awarded orders the insured to pay for costs to clean up the property that damaged. So if you compared that to this case, it's pretty difficult, but if you did, the cost the Sapienses or the McDowells might have incurred to fix the fireplace situation, they could have made that change, incurred the expense, sued for the expense. If they had sued to make the Sapienses pay for that expense for the damage to their property, that would be analogous to the environmental.
So are there some environmental cases where coverage has been found where both are occurring, where you may be remediating damages to a third party's property, but you also have to make changes to your own property that costs money? You have to, the gas tank leakage cases where you have to dig them up on your property, you have to install new things and so on and so forth. Has coverage been provided to both in those cases that
No.
you're aware of?
No, not that I'm aware of.
Does that have to do with the owned property exclusion in any of them?
Probably, but it also is not damages. Most of the cases focus on what constitute damages, and the environmental cases, most of them begin with the same premise. Injunctive relief isn't covered. That's basic. It's not damages that you pay to the other party. And a number of courts have said, this is easy, it's an injunctive relief case, it's not covered. The other courts have said, wait a minute, the CERCLA laws are different because the injunctive relief there blurs the distinction between damages and injunctive relief, because the injunctive relief is basically pay for the damages that we're going to sue you for if you force us to do it. In the environmental context case, whether it's a state or federal agency, has the ability to come in and clean up the property damage and then sue the insured for the costs that it incurred to clean up the property damage. And this is not to the insured's property, it's to another party property. Or they can go to the insured and say, instead of us doing it and then suing you, you do it directly, you pay for the cost to clean up the property damage that you've caused to a third party's property. And that's why I did the analogy here with if the Sapienses came in and fixed the...
So similarly here, if they were ordered to do something to the McDowell's party by or property by injunction, that would be one scenario. The unusual scenario here is what they were ordered to do was with regard to their own property.
Correct.
And that's what makes this one different.
Correct. And to answer the question you asked to previous counsel, there is an own property exclusion in the policy. It is in the liability section of the policy, and it's our position that it applies. It is not a part of the certified question here. The district court referenced it, I believe, because we referenced it in our brief in a footnote that this is an issue coming later, but it was before the district court on a motion to dismiss based on the allegations in the complaint, and in our judgment, it was a little difficult to argue that particular exclusion at that particular phase. So it is one that comes later on. Even if this court were to conclude that injunctive relief here falls within the insuring agreement as damages, that'll be an issue later on.
And is it your position that these are unambiguous terms in the provisions that are before us?
Yes.
Now?
Right.
There isn't a need to look at other provisions of the policy to screw them together?
Other than looking at the entire insuring agreement together, which I don't think they do. In fact, in their brief, they don't even cite the first sentence, which requires a claim brought against and insured for damages. They don't even cite that part. They jump to the second one, the second provision, and they, in our view, they take the word damages and they put it in isolation out of the context of the insuring agreement. I think in the context of the insuring agreement, which is absolutely typical in liability policies, both for homeowners and in commercial, you're referring to the damages that are paid to the plaintiff. Third-party liability coverage is about as basic as you can get. And that's why when they cite environmental cases, what they're not citing is one single case in the country which is on force with our situation. We cited, I think it's footnote 7, and we've cited a small fraction of the number of cases where courts have said the cost incurred for injunctive relief to prevent future harm is not damages in the context of the insuring agreement. You can find case after case after case. Injunctive relief, declaratory relief, mandamus actions, all of it. That is not covered in the insuring agreement of a liability policy. It's only in the environmental context where the CERCLA laws, in essence, blur that because they require an injunctive relief action to force the insured to pay for the damages that are the same damages they would otherwise pay for. So if you compared it to this situation, the environmental contamination case, it very often, if you have a typical underground storage tank leaking, whether from a manufacturing facility or petroleum, and it's leaking, there are a number of things that need to be done. Number one is you empty the tank, you pull out whatever's in there and make sure it doesn't continue to leak. That's not covered. You extract the tank out of the ground. That's not covered. You build new tanks above ground that won't leak. That's not covered. So the Sapienza's argument that they get a new house or the cost of the original house, they can't cite a single environmental case that will support that position. It's only the cost that results for injunctive relief to pay for the expenses to clean up the damage to another party. And it's under the CERCLA laws that that is categorized as an injunctive relief because they're ordering the insured to do it as opposed to ordering the insured to pay the EPA or other agency directly. So not only are the Sapienzas, they're taking the word damages and lifting it out of the insuring agreement, not putting it in the context in which it's used here. They also are unable really to cite a single case in the entire country where any court has held that the costs incurred in demolishing your own home or building a new home are covered within the insuring agreement of a liability insurance policy. I won't take up more time unless there are more questions.
Nobody has ever chastised for quitting early in this court, Mr. Price.
Thank you very much, Your Honor.
Okay, Ms. Brandt, you have 10 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you. Just a couple of things I'd like to clarify. As a preliminary matter, the excess policy defines property damage as injury to or destruction of tangible property. Injury to or destruction of tangible property. The argument that Liberty Mutual is making here that the only coverage related to the chimney is an issue that is in dispute still with Judge Lang in the federal court.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that. Tell me about that. There were other claims for damages in the lawsuit besides just the chimney, correct?
There were other claims, and it's the Sapienza's position that they're all covered claims because they all fall within property damage. And with all due respect, I think that getting into the weeds on that one particular claim and saying that's the only covered claim is outside the scope of the question, the certified question, of whether compliance with injunctive relief is covered damages under the policy. We'll have to sort out which of the claims are covered damages when we get back to Judge Lang's courtroom. But I think it's a misrepresentation to say that the only covered claim is the chimney claim because that's not the Sapienza's position here. I would also
you use the term covered damages, but you started out by talking about property damages, which is defined in the policy. Were you using them interchangeably, or did I miss that?
Well, the certified question, as written by Judge Lang, talks about do the costs incurred by the Sapienzas to comply with the injunction constitute covered damages under the policies, yeah, such that Liberty Mutual must indemnify the Sapienzas for the costs.
When I read that, I thought about that being damages, the damage term that's at issue, not so much the discrete definition of property damages.
Right. I think the question is, does injunctive relief, or do damages include the cost to comply with injunctive relief? And I think, you know, without a full discussion of the issue, but this court has already touched on this issue in the Taylor case, where the court found that there was coverage in that particular case related to both injunctive relief and monetary damages.
And that was the result that this question wasn't presented in Taylor, was it?
I'm sorry.
That was the result. But
that was the result.
But it's just the result, because this discrete question wasn't presented in Taylor.
Correct, and it was not discussed, but the result was that there was coverage for the injunctive relief. So if we look at cases that talk about that there's no distinction between pecuniary damages or money damages that are paid to a third party or compliance with injunctive relief, we read things like in the Minnesota Mining and Manufacturing versus Travelers case, which was a Minnesota case, the Minnesota court said that this court should find that damages does not have an unambiguous technical meaning, and the ordinary understanding of the term damages means any economic outlay compelled by law to rectify or mitigate damage. And that is the definition that I would ask this court to adopt. Any economic outlay compelled by law to rectify or mitigate damage. And that's the situation that we have here with the Sapienzas. Applying a technical meaning is a departure from South Dakota law. Liberty Mutual certainly could have defined their terms. I understand that they say these are common. It's a common clause in insurance policy. But if we look at some of the other cases that they point to where the court found that injunctive relief was not covered, the damages terms read a little bit differently. And they read things like damages ordered to be paid to another. And that's not the language that we have here in this case. Liberty Mutual shouldn't at this point be allowed to redefine or improperly narrow the terms of the policies. And that's why the Sapienzas are asking the court to answer the question in the affirmative so they can obtain the benefit of the insurance contract that Liberty Mutual accepted their premium payments. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, counsel. Court will be in recess.